Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode number 6 of Cloud Control. And man, are we excited for this episode. It is the God of War Ragnarok, first impressions, reviews, sort of, it's our first thoughts on God of War Ragnarok. We've had the game for like 4 days, and man, like, I've been so looking forward to this.
Oh, man, me too. I feel like it is criminal how little I've played of it since I got it. Like, my hype level, like, I left work on my lunch break to go pick it up. Like, I was gonna pick it up on my way home from work the day it came out, and I was like, I could save 15 minutes if I leave on my lunch break, so I can play 15 minutes sooner.
I thought you were gonna say you could save 15 bucks or less on your car insurance than Geico.
No way.
Oh my god. All right, you know, usually we like chat back and forth for 5 or 6 minutes, you know, just like waste some time, but there's no time to waste on this episode, everybody. So just a few things right off the top. Number one, don't forget, if you want to subscribe to our show, we haven't reminded you in a little bit, but we have a subscription plan for the show. If you want to sign up, it's $1 a month, and all proceeds that we gain for the rest of the year will be donated to prochoice.org/donate. It supports women's right to abortions in the states, very important issue, and we'll match all donations we receive the rest of the year and give it all to a good cause. So please do that if you'd like to support our content. And one other thing, usually we do listener mail at the end of the show every week, but this week, because I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about God of War for like a really long time and then jam the rest of our stuff in at the end of the episode, we're skipping listener mail this week, but we would love to hear your thoughts about God of War. If you've been playing it, what do you think of the game? How much have you played? You know, what are your favorite parts? How do you compare it to the first 2018 game? Let us know your thoughts. Write them in cloudcontrolpod@proton.me or on Twitter @cloudcontrolpod. You can get in touch. We'd love to hear what you think about the game. We'll be talking about it a lot more on future episodes, so we'd love to incorporate what you have to say about it when we get onto those later shows. So the run of the show today, we're going to talk about God of War Ragnarok. We both played about, 5 to 7 hours-ish. I'm a little slight bit further than you, but we're along the same lines, so we're going to get into that. We've got a couple other topics at the end of the show, but this is the God of War episode, everybody. So just before we talk about the game, though, I just wanted to show off and gloat for just a minute, because I had some controller drift on my DualSense, so I ended up picking up one of these bad boys. This, for video listeners, is the Ragnarok DualSense controller. Man, it's nice, hey?
It is so nice.
Super nice.
I'm ordering mine. The second we stop recording, I'm like on Amazon ordering mine.
Get to it. So yeah, it's cool. Got, for those watching, God of War on the back, and it's got some really nice little illustrations there. I mean, it's just a controller, but I like it. I think the white PlayStation logo is really like what the standout part of it, you know? Usually that's black. You can't even see it on the video right now. Apologies, but I'm sure everyone sees it online.
It's so minimalistic.
Yeah, you can tell we're hyped up for this show. Okay, so God of War Ragnarok, obviously the sequel to God of War 2018. Some might say the best game of last generation. Definitely rated high on our list. I think it's raised to the top of our combined game of all time list.
I think it won, didn't it?
It did
win. Two winners who had, Bloodborne and God of War 2018. So.
Exactly.
I guess I need a God of War tattoo now.
I think we should get matching God of War tattoos. That'd be
dope.
Cool.
I'll get the little wolf, you can get the big wolf.
Yeah. All right, so God of War Ragnarok. I think I mentioned before, we're going to completely spoil 2018, talking freely about that. If you've not played God of War 2018, you're probably going to get spoiled on how that game ends.
But you really should play it.
Yeah, so God of War, Kate, where do you want to start? You have a big-ass book of notes on the desk right here. I got some notes on my phone.
Yeah, it started out as just a few podcast notes, but I've been, like, chronicling my entire journey. It's color-coded. I have been making, like, a journal of my Ragnarok adventures.
Yeah, so this game really picks up, like, I mean, it's a little ways, after 2018. The first thing I noticed myself, like, if we want to talk in general, is just... I think we're going to talk about the game generally at first, and then we'll get into maybe the first 5 hours of story after
that.
Yeah,
so it'll be safe listening for now, and then we'll warn you when, please avert your ears and just go play the game.
We'll give you a warning, but so I guess the big thing for God of War to start off is I think we should talk about the combat first and how it all works. The combat in God of War 2018 was, I think it was really good, but this game... just seems to have sort of taken that formula and expanded it just a little bit more. And for me, I think the thing that I noticed most about that from the start is just having both the blades and the axe at the start, mm-hmm. I think has really, it's added an extra layer to how they can engage with the combat. You know, there's a lot more enemies that have sort of a weakness to either fire or ice. Yeah. And it's really just varied a lot more than the start of the game when you only have the axe. Like there's mm-hmm. basically twice as many moves you have off the start of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And you can start building out your skill tree if you have a preference for one or the other, as opposed to like you've invested so much in the axe and then you get the blades and it's like, do you start investing in them or do you kind of just stick with the axe?
Yeah. But what have you been doing on your skill tree?
I've mostly been doing the axe.
I've been mostly doing the blades. That's interesting.
Oh, interesting. I do really like the blades, but I've mostly stuck to axe. In the first game, I think I did the same, although Atreus' skill tree was my first. Mm-hmm. But in this game, they have different XP. Like, it's separate, which is cool. So Kratos has his skill trees for, like, the blades and then for the axe, and he gets his own XP. And then Mr. Kratos has that. And then Atreus has his own, which is, like, what you want to do with him, mm-hmm. which I liked because I always felt like I prioritized Atreus. So now it's like, well, I don't have to prioritize him. I can just have both.
yeah. And the other thing, too, like, the combat itself, it's more than just Kratos' skill set. I think you really notice the arenas are a lot different in this game. Mm-hmm. There's so much more movement, I think. If you want to criticize 2018, I know like the thing we've always mentioned is the enemy variety. But beyond the variety, though, it's also like Kratos himself, if you really want to be nitpicky, is a bit slow as a character.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of movement. I know he does have some like lunging attacks and you can kind of evade, but he's quite slow.
He was a bit like, not, I don't want to say sluggish, but he felt a bit like, yeah,
heavy. He's heavy.
He's heavy. He didn't feel very mobile necessarily.
But in this game, because you have the blade so early on, you have, and anyone who's watched the trailers would see, you have the blades and you can kind of use them as like a grapple shot and pull yourself up. There's a lot more verticality in a lot of the environments. Mm-hmm. Like you'll have ledges you can kind of go up. There'll be sometimes enemies shooting down from you, but instead of just having
there's
to throw your axe.
Some enemies kind of early on that can climb a little bit, which I thought was really cool. Because it kind of, instead of just like looking at the ground, there was a couple times like, where are they shooting me from? I'm like, oh shit, they've actually like climbed up there. And that was like a cool moment.
Yeah, and there's a lot more, I feel like they do a lot more contextual stuff too, where, I mean, in the first game they had it where, you know, Atreus would be like, oh, on your left. But I feel like Mimir and Atreus are really talking to you a lot more in this game. Like, oh, behind you, brother, watch out. And like, there's poison.
And I love that. It's like great for gameplay, but it's also so, it's such a nice narrative thing of like how far they've come as a team all together, right? Mm-hmm. Like you think back to the first game and it's like Atreus sucks, right? Like he starts off, he's not overly helpful. And like over time he grows and he gets to be so much more of like a competent like member of your team. And Kratos like trusts him more at first. It's like, oh, Atreus, like go hide, like don't be in danger. And then eventually it's like, okay, we're working together. But off the bat from this game, like Atreus is like, you can have him shoot arrows. He's like choking guys out. He gets up there and like melees stuff with you. Like he really feels like a dynamic part of the fight, even if it is still just that simple like square button to control
him. It's even though you're not controlling him a lot, it feels like he's more engaged with it. And he's like aggressive, you know, like he'll go and attack guys. And before, I feel like he was almost just like your ranged moves, like you said, pressing X with the arrow. You didn't really see him as much, but in this one you're right, he's like with you. And there's even some finishing moves, like when you stagger enemies and Kratos and Atreus will like combo guys like together, they'll both be going at him. It just feels like they're a lot more of a team in this game. Like not that Kratos isn't the one who's doing most of the killing and is like in charge, you know, but it feels less like he's like, it's less like an escort mission where Atreus is kind of like there to help you in the background. And he's actually like a competent partner in these encounters, which I really appreciate. And with the combat too, the other thing is there's a lot more like interactive contextual stuff in the environments, you know,
so there's like trees you can pick up and throw or like big stones, stuff like that. They're pretty cool. It's funny seeing them. The one thing that's funny about those is like you look at like something in the distance and you see some of those like things, you know, you can interact with. It's like, oh shit, we're gonna have a fight down there.
You see like a pre-drop like health little drop and you're like, oh, someone's gonna try and kill me here. They're not gonna get me.
I'm enjoying it so far. Like, I think there will probably be a lot of things that are added to. Like, I'm interested to see later on if there's some new weapons
Oh, there's going to be at least one.
Which I think is going to be at least
one. There's never been a God of War game where you don't get at least one weapon.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm interested to see what that is and some new abilities. But I think overall, like, it feels very similar to 2018 mm-hmm. in terms of combat, especially like the flow of it. But I think you're right that it's just kind of like they've polished it a little bit and it just feels that little bit extra, like, better to play.
Yeah, totally. And to be fair, with our criticism of the enemy variety, to my, like, obviously we're not that far in, but I feel like I've encountered more variety of enemies than I was expecting to have at this point in the game.
Yeah.
Especially once I've been to a couple different locations at this point. We'll talk about those in a little bit, but the enemies are, like, definitely more expanded. I would say, like, if you took the first 5 hours of this game versus the first 5 hours of the other mm-hmm. one, I've definitely fought more different stuff.
I agree. And I think I kind of was expecting that going into it, because I know that was one of the things the team had said beforehand, was that they wanted to have more variety in the first game, but it just came down to, like, budget and restraints and time, and mm-hmm. they didn't, you know, that was just one of the areas that they sort of had to compromise on. But they are very aware of the feedback, and especially since that was, like, the only thing that was really, like, holding 2018 back, aside from everything else being, like, a 10 out of 10. So I think they probably, like, focused on that a bit more in this game, and it at least at the beginning of the game it shows.
Yeah, sure. So you brought up skill trees a little bit earlier, and you start off, you got the skill trees for both your weapons, and then Atreus has his. But we got to talk about Atreus here for a second, because the skill trees for both of Kratos' weapons, they're locked, like, they're tiered based on how you, if you level up your axe or the swords, they're going to unlock more moves as they level up. But Atreus' skill tree is quite small. Like, he just has, like, 4 nodes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's going to be more. And here's our first little spoiler warning for you. Anyone that's not played past first few hours, but there's a point in the game you come to where Atreus is, like, transformed into a bear that you have to kill, and you don't know it's him originally. And the second I saw that, I was like, okay, Atreus, Loki, shape-shifting, like, his skill tree is going to expand.
Absolutely.
We're going to get a shape-shifting skill tree for Atreus, right?
Absolutely. I think it's going to be, like, a few animals he might have mm-hmm. and, like, things based off of that. Like, he might have, like, a bird one where you can do, like, distraction, or he might have, like, a bear that's more offensive. Mm-hmm. I really think it's gonna be something like that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it made me smile so much. Like, the bear scene is quite, like, it's sad. Like, it's harsh. It's kind of a...
Did you expect that to be Atreus?
I did not.
I didn't either.
I did not. I feel like afterwards I should have seen it coming, but I did not expect it to be him at the time. But it did kind of make me smile in a tragic way, because I know in 2018... when he finds out he's a god, and they're talking about, like, well, what kind of powers will I have? He doesn't know yet. And the first thing he asks is, like, oh, can I turn into animals?
Yeah.
And then, so it's like, well, fuck, I should have seen it coming. But, like, it's like, oh, you could do it, little buddy.
I feel like there's probably so many lines throughout the first game that are like, they knew they dropped that in there because that was a plan for the sequel. Oh, and you'd absolutely never, ever realize it when you're playing through. But if we complete this game and go back and play absolutely the first, there was probably so much
more. You know, and that's part of what I've been, like, thinking about my book, is to have that kind of stuff. But also, like, I think it's a testament to how much I love 2018. Like, my memory is notoriously awful. But I was playing through Ragnarok, and I was thinking about 2018, like, leading up to it. And I remember it distinctly so many little things, and it's like, I don't do that for every game, but, like, 2018 was special, and Ragnarok is, like, mm-hmm. it's gonna be equally special, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the last thing for me, at least, I don't know if you had any other topics, but mm-hmm. for me, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about before we kind of got into, like, more of the story and the lore and everything was the environments in this game. And I'm trying to remember 2018, and I think it was pretty similar, but the design of this game, the environments, it is just there is so many little nooks and crannies to go around, and you find a chest, and they're so good at, like, you know, when you're walking through an environment, you're like, oh, there's a chest in the distance right there.
Yeah.
And you're trying to, like, figure out a path of how you're going to get it, and you mm-hmm. can't get there. And the game is, like, teasing you, and you're, like, supposed to go forward a little bit further and, like, loop back, and you find stuff. But then sometimes it's like you're exploring for one thing, and you think you're going to head one way mm-hmm. to find the chest that you've seen. And then you turn a corner, and you actually are led towards, like, another thing that's hidden. And I feel as though it's just so enticing to explore this world in a way. And people talk about, I think, the Souls games in a similar way. And I wouldn't say they're one-to-one. Like, the Souls games maps are more intricately, like, looped together and connected. Yeah. But this game has a similar quality in terms of how it's just so compelling to look in every corner and like break every little thing in case there's something behind it. And there's so many collectibles.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament to how much I care about the collectibles. Like in a game, like I just played Plague Tale Requiem recently and I love that game. But by the second half of the game, I'd kind of like stopped caring about checking every little nook and cranny, which like for me is something I normally like, I'm so obsessive about that kind of stuff in games. But by like the second half, I just didn't care because I didn't need any more resources. Just, like I was full on pots. Like I didn't need any more like alcohol. Like I just like, mm-hmm. well, maybe I needed alcohol because I was upset, but I didn't need it in the game.
And Amicia needed some alcohol.
And so like it just didn't have the incentive to do it.
Yeah.
But in God of War, like I'm so compelled. Like, sure, sometimes it's just some hack silver and like whatever, it's an upgrade material.
But even that, it's like I want as much hack silver as I can get.
Exactly, because the armor and the upgrades are actually cool. But the best thing is you find so many like just nice little world building things. Like there's like
one-off items.
Yeah, like you find like an artifact and then you can go in the codex. And Kratos is quite an artistic man, I must say. He does these beautiful drawings of everything he finds and everyone he meets. But it tells you a little bit about it. And I love that because obviously like these games play pretty like fast and loose with like the myths they're based on. Like, you know, like Loki wasn't really Kratos' son in Norse mythology, but they play off of those stories.
Yeah.
And they just give you these extra little tidbits. And Kratos gives usually like a little bit of like how he feels about it as well. Like he'll make little like comments on the things you find as well. And it's so charming to kind of make the world feel more real. And have you found any poems?
I found like the blue like hieroglyphs or whatever they are on the walls. I don't know if I found a poem.
You haven't found any poems? Okay, I found two poems. You got, this is why it takes me forever to beat these games and I have a book. There's two poems I found and it's not really a spoiler because it's just like cute things.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling there's 14 in total. I found two. The second one didn't...
Did you write any of your book? Can you read them to us right now?
I didn't write down the full poems. You gotta find them yourself. I'm not doing all the work for you. All right. But there's the second one I didn't find familiar, but the first one was definitely a poem about another Sony game.
Really?
And I have a feeling that like at least some of these poems are like Easter eggs for other Sony games.
Because that's cool.
Very much about another one.
I wouldn't be surprised about that just because all the studios do seem to be like very much like, you know, take pieces from here and there. They're so like camaraderie focused in terms of like, hey, congrats on your release and stuff.
Yeah.
And Astrobot had so many things. Like there was Kratos was in that game and stuff. Like,
exactly.
For sure.
The first one was a pretty notable game, but I am on the hunt now to find a Bloodborne one. That's not my biggest Ragnarok goal because it's a good fucking game, but a side quest of playing Ragnarok is there better be a Bloodborne poem.
Oh, man. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up that's kind of, spoiler-free sort of discussion?
A lot of this stuff is going to be probably pretty spoilery from here on out. Like, the combat's good. The soundtrack is amazing. I got to say, the sound design is incredible. It's the same composer that did the first game, so same kind of level of quality there.
Yeah. How do you feel about being back in some similar environments? Like, the game is sort of... I mean, it's different. I can't say I recognize a lot of locations, but... There are some places you kind of retrek through from the first game.
And there will be because I think they said we'll visit all 9 realms in this one. So we will, you know, we visited maybe not the exact same place in each realm, but we're going to go kind of take like a grand tour potentially. But you do some of the same places. We go to Kratos' house, right? And I think it's cool to see because it makes sense. Like, that's where they'd be. And, you know, the characters are familiar. They're commenting on it. But it's different because now it's, like, Fimbulwinter has set in, right? So it's, like, covered in snow and it is changed a little bit.
Yeah. Now, just remember, everyone, if this was Pokemon, it would be criticized for reusing the same map assets. But because it's not, we're going to let it pass. Okay, so this is your official spoiler warning for we're going to, you know, first 5-6 hours of the game. Spoilers are on now for story stuff and everything like that. So the game starts off and you're sitting in a cave. Like Kratos is actually, if you remember, the first game starts off and Kratos is teaching Atreus to hunt. Like he's like a useless young boy and Kratos is like, fuck, I have
to. He's also really little. Yeah. I watched the like stranger scene, the opening scene where the stranger comes to visit the first time, and Atreus is sitting there, and he's so little in comparison to how he is now.
It's true. Yeah. But this game is like a really interesting parallel to that, because it's, yeah, I think it's set a little bit after the first game, and it starts off, and instead of Kratos taking Atreus to go and hunt, Kratos is like, you know, whittling some arrows in a cave, and Atreus comes back and he has this deer on his back and the horns are lined up perfectly.
Just like Loki.
Just like Loki's helmet. And you're like, holy shit, that's amazing. And he comes in and it's clear that he's still very small and like, you know, a teen of some kind, but he's a lot more competent. Like he's hunted already by himself. He comes in, like they're clearly a lot more of a, it's more of like a symbiotic relationship rather than a one, like a father son. It's still his father son, but mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say.
There's a lot more equality in the relationship now. And I've noticed too, like to add to that point, like both of them are so, they're both trying to be really independent, I think. Because mm-hmm. like Kratos, like Loki comes, or it's weird to call him Loki. I feel like.
It's still Atreus. It's still Atreus.
But he comes in and he's got the deer. And, you know, Kratos is like, oh, do you need help, like, putting it on the sled? And he's like, no, I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. And then later when they're, like, unpacking, it's like, oh, I'll help you with the deer. But, like, Atreus has already gotten it. And so they kind of, like, they make a really good team when they have to work together. But they still have that, like, oh, no, I don't need your help. Like, I'll do it myself kind of dynamic where there's that barrier still. But it's so cool to see, like, how far that they've come from the first game.
Yeah, totally. And so when they leave that that cave originally, that's when we're really introduced to one of the brand new first mechanics, which is the dog sled riding, which, I mean, it was what it was. I wouldn't say it was amazing, but it was an exciting scene to go through and like have that sort of chase sequence, and Freya comes in sort of unexpectedly, like out of nowhere. You're already like being chased by her and she's like out to fucking kill you. Like
she was out to kill you, but they kind of had the energy of like, oh, Freya's back again. Like, oh, all right, come on, here we go. Like same song and dance.
I mean, you get the impression they've been dealing with this for a while, right? Like they've been sort of trying to live their life and whatever their objective ends up being, I'm not quite sure, but...
Yeah, it seems like they've kind of just been... And it's hard to tell how long it's been, but it seems like they've sort of just been laying low and kind of, like, a lot of training.
Yeah.
Kratos foresees there being conflict with the gods. I can't imagine why. and he's sort of trying to prepare Atreus, and Atreus is not content to necessarily, like... He feels like they're just sitting still and wasting time.
Yeah, I found that to be a really interesting dynamic between the two of them, because Kratos has historically been so aggressive and active, whereas now with this time passing, maybe he's become a little bit older and Atreus has become like a little bit more impulsive with his, you know, teenage years, but it's almost like Kratos has to rein Atreus in now, and like Atreus is the one who's like, oh, we're going to war, like, you know, we need to go out and take this fight to them. And Kratos is like, no, we need to be patient and you need to train. Whereas before, I feel like Kratos would have just been like, fuck it, I'm invincible. Like, I'm going to go take him out.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is before Kratos had nothing to live for, right? Like when you go back to the Greek saga, he's like, you know, he kills his family and because he's tricked by the gods. And he's like, all this shit happens to him and he's so just consumed by revenge. But I think he's got that sense where, like, he doesn't care about himself, right? He has no idea, like, no concern about self-preservation because he has nothing left to live for. Like,
or he didn't. He didn't.
Yeah, he didn't, because the only thing he was living for was revenge at the time. But now, like, he's grown so much and he has something to live for, which is Atreus, right? Like, that's what Kratos cares about right now. Like, you know, his wife is gone. He's got Atreus left. And so he's tempered himself in. But his biggest concern, and this was from 2018 and still carrying onward, is that he's concerned that Atreus is going to, like, take the worst parts of him. So with Atreus being, like, you know, kind of aggressive or impulsive, like, those are the exact qualities Kratos was worried that
exactly
he would pass on.
Yeah, there was a quote early on, and I've written a few down on here just because, like, I think there's so many great, like, short one-liners in this game. And early on, Atreus, he's like, you know, I think he's really looking to Kratos for guidance. And he asks him, you know, he says to him, like, think like a general, not like a father.
Yeah.
And Kratos is just like, no.
Well, yeah, I wrote, that's in my book too. He goes, no. He's like, no. And then a quieter no.
Yeah.
Because the answer's first, like, that first impulse is like freaks out for a second. And then he kind of reins his anger and he's like, no. I'm gonna now, like, explain to you why not.
I kind of feel like Kratos isn't, like, he's not a fearful person, right? Like you said, he's invincible. Like, he'll fight anyone. Like, he really believes he'll win. But in this game, because he's so like he's fearless, so many there's not a lot of people that will push back against him, and Atreus is like the one character. He's like fearless in the same way, and he's no problem now like telling Kratos he's mm-hmm. got a completely differing opinion, you know.
Yeah.
Like he's willing to like have this, he has this growth, and he's becoming kind of like his father in the sense he's very independent, even though he's clearly like nowhere near as powerful as Kratos. But you know, he has that confidence that Kratos is like is really there to be his caretaker, and he's like it gives him his confidence to tell his true opinion mm-hmm. on what's going on.
Yeah. And I think it kind of boils down, they're gonna have an interesting kind of like ideological conflict mm-hmm. because it seems like so far the main story is centered around like Atreus wants to find out who he is and what it means to be Loki and like what his fate and his destiny is, and so that kind of drives so far like the beginning of the plot is Atreus being like, I gotta find out who Loki is, I gotta find out what the giants like, you know, prophesize for me, what my destiny is, what I'm supposed to do. And Kratos is very like opposed to that kind of idea, like, I don't believe in destiny, like, you can't trust the gods, there is no fate, yeah, like,
you make your own, you like, make future, your own right?
Future. But in the flip side, Kratos is very attuned to, like, natural law, because you have that scene early on, and I have so many reasons why I think Kratos is gonna die, which
we'll get into that.
But at the start, when Fenrir is dying, and Kratos tells Atreus, he's like, you, there's nothing you can do to save him, like, it's too late, he's like, you have to let him go. Like, you have to just accept it kind of thing, because that's, like, that's the nature of it. Mm-hmm. And then later on when they're at the bear cubs, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, well, nature will take care of it. Like, we can't intervene.
Right, there's the bear corpse, nature, like, the parent bear, and there's the two cubs.
Exactly. He's like, we can't intervene. Like, you know, Atreus, what's going to happen to the cubs if the parent bear is dead? It's like, well, nature will take care of it. So it's interesting how, for Kratos, that's nature, like, you know, what happens in the forest and animals and life and death, and that is nature, but prophecy and fate is not natural.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because, like, you think back to like how many things Kratos has done that's like tempered with gods, right? Like, the fates are gods in Greece, right?
Well, like, Kratos has died multiple times and come back because he just doesn't care.
He just climbs like the hell. He doesn't give a shit about prophecy, and like he thinks those aren't natural. Those are the gods doing.
Yeah, like if you persevere enough, you can undo it. Like, for him, exactly. Yeah,
but that doesn't extend to, like, you know, if the wolf is dying, it's dead. That's, you can't change that. So it's an interesting like barrier how those two things like overlap so much. But Atreus really subscribes to one side of it, and Kratos is kind of like almost like the opposite side of the coin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kratos is, I think, in the same way that, I mean, obviously Kratos had like a ridiculous glow up from the original games, like in terms of his character growth and like having a personality in 2018.
Yeah, because he was man literally too angry to die.
He actually like had a, you know, a personality. But in this game, I already, having played the little bit that I have and like what we've talked about already, but another thing that's really stuck out to me about Kratos being different, and maybe my memory's a little bit, you know, blurry on what it was like before, but I also feel like in the same way that Kratos has become, his relationship with Atreus has evolved, I think it has with Mimir also, in the sense that I think Kratos actually, for the first time, is, like, looking for Mimir's advice.
Yes.
Like, there was a couple times where he's, you know, Mimir's giving him, like, parenting advice or been like, what should I do about my son, you know? And he's like, oh, the boy's gonna do, like, what he's gonna do, you know? And like, it's really weird to see Kratos actually take someone's advice and, like, consider it and not just have his own set in stone sort of opinion on the matter, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty cool to have seen that.
That is really true. And I think that should lead us into probably the coolest scene from the first few hours of the game, when Thor and Odin up. And so this was neat to me because it obviously really mirrors from 2018 when Baldur or the Stranger shows up for the first time, right? And in that one, Stranger shows up and it's just immediate to fighting. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's like Kratos is like, nope, come to my house. You're aggressive.
Get off my lawn. No, I'm going to kill you.
Time to die. Whereas Thor shows up and it's obviously like kind of an intimidating, aggressive scene. It's like, I brought mead. Can I come in? And Kratos actually lets him in and he sits down, and obviously it doesn't end up well. Doesn't end up going well. But he entertains the idea that they could peacefully resolve the conflict, which is crazy for Kratos.
It's unheard of. He would never have done that before.
No.
And it's almost like he wants to show Atreus that things can be different because of the way he's lived his life. Exactly. That's like what I'm getting from that, right?
Exactly, right? He wants, you know, Atreus to not jump to fighting or to an aggressive mm-hmm. solution every time. And obviously, the lesson doesn't end up sticking because you have a cool fight with Thor. But man, and I gotta say, in that scene too, like, it's so funny when, like, Thor sits down, he, like, slams Mjolnir on the table, so Kratos, like, slams the Leviathan yeah. eggs down, and they have the ultimate just, like, dick measuring contest. So there's also, like, the dad energy of Kratos just kind of looks like Thor came in to ask his daughter to prom. Like, he's just sort of he's trying to be polite, but he's also pissed off.
I also kind of felt like he was also posturing a bit, because for as big and, like, intimidating as Kratos is, like, Thor is fucking huge. Like, Thor's he's a huge. Big dude. And it's almost like he needs to show his son, like, no, your dad's just as tough as this guy, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's all, by the way, Thor played by Ryan Hurst of Sons of Anarchy fame. Great performance so far. And speaking of great performances, I love the portrayal of Odin in this.
Yeah.
Our first time seeing Odin, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect. Like, obviously, we were going to see him. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we saw him early on, because I think it establishes, like, it's establishing more of that realm of, like, those type of gods, right? And I feel almost like they're portrayed as, like, a mafioso family in this game, you know?
Dude, it kind of does. Thor's, like, the muscle.
And, yeah, like, That's what I thought.
He goes to, like, intimidate first, and he just sort of waits for Odin to show up. Like, I don't know what to do. Can I fight him yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Odin was neat. I feel like I really liked him as well. I feel like I could see some people being, like, a little bit polarized by his portrayal. Mm. It wasn't necessarily what I expected.
I mean, I don't know a lot about, like, that mythology, mm-hmm. right? Like, is this how Odin usually would be? Like,
I mean, I think it depends. Like, I don't think it was, like, super unfaithful, but I also think that, like, I've seen it in other ways as well. But what stands out to me and makes it very Odin, what I liked about it, is that he is not a fighter, right? Like, he shows mm-hmm. up and, you know, we've seen Kratos fight so many different gods, and it always ends up in the most, like, outrageous bloody fist fight. But Odin shows up and it's like, he doesn't seem like he's going to fight at all, right? But he's I bet he will. But he's so, like, conniving. He's like a schemer. That's how he shows up, right? He's like a silver tongue, like, smooth talker. And that's his first go-to.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of walks around and he's manipulative. And, you know, like, the way he speaks to them, when he speaks to Atreus. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, but one more thing. And, you know, even insults Thor's sons in front of him. He's like, they weren't important. But Baldur was important. And so, like, you never really feel like you're going to be confident you could trust him.
So here's a theory for you. You're describing him as silver-tongued and, like, manipulative and mm-hmm. less of a fighter, more of a talker. Will this game separate Kratos and Atreus and have Atreus kind of lured towards seeing Odin's point of view and, like, you know, will he try to taint him or take him from Kratos and stuff?
They definitely set that up as a conflict, because Odin sort of, I mean, Odin wants Atreus to stop looking for Tyr.
Yeah.
But he also, like, is the kind of person that would offer deals as well, right?
Exactly. Like, I'd say, hey, kid, like, you know, your dad doesn't want to go to war. We don't want to have a war. Come with me.
Well, and he invited Atreus after a year off fighting Thor, and you get back. And Atreus tells you, he's like, well, what was he talking about? He's like, well, he offered for me to come with them mm-hmm. and, like, kind of be part of their, like, sort of Norse pantheon, right? And obviously Atreus had said no.
Yeah.
But later I could see if, you know, him and Kratos get into some conflict and he could run away. Like, it could be his tantrum version of, like, when he finds that he's a god in 2018. So
100%. Or, like, if, you know, some situation where Kratos is like, no, you can't pursue this.
Exactly.
Like, I won't let you put yourself in danger. And he's like, well, this is my calling. Like, Odin said he will help me. I can totally see that happening.
Exactly. I could see it happening for sure. And the other thing is, Odin gives him a coin mm-hmm. to pay for the roof. And, you know, Kratos
With the roof gets destroyed.
Oh, yeah. You guys, like, super, like, anime, like, fly up to fight in the sky. But Kratos, like, throws it away. And I don't know this from any, like, particular, like, source material, but I just think, like, the detail of having been gifted a coin, to me, I almost wonder if there's some kind of, like, binding contract, like, if that coin, like, binds Atreus something because he accepted mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that could be something as well that, like, ties him Interesting. Odin. Yeah. Because, like, you know, when somebody like that, like a schemer with like magic and various properties, like you don't accept gifts from them. So it seems innocuous to just be like, oh, a coin, like whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But they kind of lingered on it a little bit, and like they made an effort of Kratos, like put it down, and then later he picked it up and threw it away. And so
yeah.
I wonder if that coin will end up being like
important. Oh, it'll be something. I'm sure it'll be something, but
yeah.
Yeah. So that's Odin and Thor. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of other characters so far in the game. We've obviously met Brock and Sindri, fan mm-hmm. favorites. I think Sindri's my favorite character, like, aside from Kratos and Atreus, obviously. Like, Sindri is the best.
I love Sindri. I love them both, but of the two, Sindri's the one that always gets a big smile out of me.
Yeah, and so it's good to see them again. Obviously, Freya as well, but I feel like, at least to the point where we're at now, we haven't seen a lot of other characters. Obviously, Fenrir was there, and in the trailer, we saw the picture of, like, the giant dog. Like, he was very big mm-hmm. and these dogs were like dog sized dogs, so I'm wondering, like, when will that come into play?
Yeah, you know? There'll be some wolves, because they had a pack. Like, it was very much established that they would have been like living with these wolves for a while
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and like Atreus is obviously like very close with them, so I think that will end up being more established later. And like also the dog sledding, like, they're, you know.
Yeah, they didn't just put that in there for the start of the game.
Like, not just gonna be a one dog sled sequence.
Okay, so in the interest of time here, because we could talk about this game for a long time, you have this giant notebook.
I have this giant.
Here's notebook. The question we have to ask, and we've been talking about this before. Do we still think Kratos is going to die
at the end of this game? I think all signs lead to Kratos dying.
Enlighten me.
So I've color-coded where Kratos is dying. So when Fenrir passes away, he says to Atreus that Fenrir was... tell him, like, or Atreus says to Fenrir after Kratos counsels him on, like, you know, you got to accept his death. At first, Atreus is in denial, like, he'll be fine if I just keep feeding him, you know, we'll nurse him back to health. Kratos tells him, no, like, he's dying, you just have to accept it. So Atreus says to Fenrir, fast and strong, but you can rest now, you have to let go. Does that remind you of anyone else who might be fast or strong? Atreus has to say,
I wouldn't say Kratos is fast.
Well, he's pretty fast. Spartan run.
That's true. Spartan
run. So I've written that down and then said, oh no, Kratos beside it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a big oh no for Kratos. And then later on, when Mimir and Kratos are talking about prophecy, Kratos says to Mimir, Atreus must learn to survive on his own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in prophecy, but...
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot early on about, like, the acceptance of death. It is a very heavy theme.
Well, it was a big theme in the last game, too, because it starts off, like, the whole quest is to deliver his mother's ashes to the top of a mountain. Like, there's loss in these games to start.
Yeah, that is very true. There's a lot of loss and death, and it is a big concept, but I think, like... Kratos is going to be like more and more involved in it. And then obviously we have with the bears where there is that acceptance we talked about earlier of like, oh, you know, nature will take its course. Like, you know, the kids will have to learn either to learn to survive without their parent, like Kratos, or, you know.
I got to say, like, I'm definitely not as like astute with the imagery as you, like being the English person. But, like, that was a slap in the face. Like, when the bear parent was dead and there was the baby, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I see what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, there's the bear parents. Here's my biggest piece of evidence. My favorite piece of Kratos' death tinfoil I found is, so when you're riding in the boat for the first time, and you get to, there's, like, a place that's, you gotta go under something.
And they do that bridge. Awkward, like, slide under the bridge?
Well, yeah, they slide under the bridge. But if you notice, if you look closely, and it's not just that time, it's every time you slide under something in the bridge, Atreus kneels forward, like, in kind of, like, a fetal position. He goes forward. Kratos lays on his back and crosses his arm.
Wow.
Like coffin death position.
Wow.
And how do you bury, how do you like say goodbye to someone in that kind of culture, right? You send them out on the boat. That is their coffin. You send them on the boat and you shoot the flaming arrows. And Kratos lays in his stupid coffin position.
Wow.
Like he's gonna die.
And Atreus has arrows.
And Atreus doesn't do that pose. He curls up like in like, you know, like head between his like knees kind of position, but Kratos lays back and it's the arm cross.
Wow. So I got to say, this is either the most insane, like subtle imagery that you've picked up on, or you are really, really reading into this theory.
No,
I don't know what it is.
Look, I'm only a couple hours in. I've already got all these notes. It's in pink for Kratos' death. And I have one more one, but this is a hopeful one because you see, while Kratos seems destined to die, there's also the second motif going on of fate doesn't mean fuck all, and we change our fate. So, if you remember back to the fight where he's, you know, Mjolnir and Thor and Kratos and his axe, and they're fighting, and it has, like, the most, one of the most badass scenes in gaming where you, like, lose to Thor.
Yeah.
And it takes you to the death screen, and for a second you're like, oh shit, like, I guess I just wasn't quick enough, like, he beat me. And Thor is like, oh no, it's not time yet. And he, like, defibrillates you with Mjolnir and, like, pulls you back into the fight.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have to tell you, that is my favorite part of the game so far.
It was so
fucking cool.
They
fake you out with the death screen, like the game over, like, menu screen comes up.
Yeah, where it gives you, like, the tips, like, tool tips and shit are up on the screen.
I when that happened, I was like, okay, this game came to play.
My jaw dropped,
like,
on that.
That is some inscription level, like,
that was some meta shit.
Amazing.
So, but they've set that up, right? Of, like, Kratos getting pulled back from the death screen by Mjolnir. Mm-hmm. And I could see that everything's set up looking for Kratos to die. Kratos dies, goes to that death screen, and then he himself is like, no, fuck this. And he pulls himself back from the death screen.
That would be amazing.
Is how I think a climactic scene could be near the end of the game.
That would be pretty cool.
So I'm totally cheating by saying he's going to die, but also might resurrect himself. So I'm covered on both fronts.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think he might pull himself back out.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing I was thinking about, and I'd actually forgotten about this mechanic before I started this game, but there's actually that resurrection stone that you can have where, like, in the lore of this game, when Kratos gets downed, if you have a partner with you, and that's another thing too, the game says if you have a partner with you, it doesn't say if Atreus is with you.
Oh.
So will Kratos have another partner with the resurrection stone? Like, if Atreus was to go up to Asgard, will there be someone else joining Kratos? Because technically, like, they should have just said if Loki's with you, right? So
maybe
that's an interesting thing.
Mimir
has no arms.
It's tough.
By the way, it's amazing when Mimir gets stuck on the little beanbag and he's flipping pages with his tongue.
Yeah, he's like,
amazing. But I just thought, like, that's interesting, right? If Kratos is to die, like, they do have this stone. Like, you know, lore-wise, how would that work? Like, will the stone get broken? Will you lose it as a mechanic in the game at some point? Because then he can't be brought back. Like, it's very interesting.
True.
Yeah, wow.
So... Oh.
It's amazing. So we both played up until we reached a town called Nidavellir. It's like the second realm you go to is the Dwarven realm. I don't believe we went there in the first game.
We did not go there in the first game. So
this
is new.
That's very new. And what I really like about going there is the environment is just so much different. You go from this snowy kind of Norse woods, and all of a sudden it's almost like a beach. There's lots of water and rocks and
like
desert
plants. Like, there's lizards and things. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to see that. There's mechanical things, because obviously the dwarves are into mining and all this stereotypical sort of stuff.
Dwarf culture.
But I'm just really excited as we go forward to see what, because you said we're going to all nine realms, right? Like, what the variety of realms are going to be, because in the original game, like, you know, we go to a few different, they all do look quite different, but I think that was another thing where it's like, I was so excited to see all these different realms and what they're going to be. I just think this game is going to have so much to offer in terms of, like, the enemy variety, the environments, like, all the characters you're going to meet in the different realms, you know, like, it just seems like... it's just so compelling, I
think.
Yeah,
and this game is known for spectacle, right? Like, God of War is such a spectacle franchise, and what makes it so special is that it does the other parts, too. Like, God of War would almost be worth playing just for, like, the massive set pieces, right? Like, the big bear fight you do, and, you know, when you fight, like, dragons and gods, and, like, there's all this crazy shit happening all the time. And I think that would be, like, enough. But the fact that, like, the story, the world, the characters, the writing, the combat, like... Even the puzzle solving I always really enjoy. Like, there's everything else is done so well. But at the end of the day, like, a big premise of God of War is spectacle. And so to go to all these different realms and have these, like, amazing environments for them to play around in is such an exciting feature.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's a good way to start summarizing and, like, wrapping up the conversation on God of War. It's just, like you said, I think the reason this game, like, specifically 2018 and this one, gets so much praise is because... There's so few games that are, like, masterpiece level in all of those aspects.
Yes.
You know, there's lots of games where the combat's great, but oh, maybe there's nothing to explore. Like, the world is really cool, but the combat is just like, oh, you just counter over and over again. Like, there's nothing to do. This game has, like, it's like an A-tier game in all of these aspects. And if you're in it for the story, you can turn the difficulty down to easy and, like, breeze through the combat, and it still looks amazing to play. Or if you're really into, like, difficult combat and you're in for that, you can crank it up, and it's going to be, like... Those Valkyrie fights are on par with some of the best combat in games, right?
They're hard, like, too. Like, they're not easy.
Yeah,
they're
and you hard. Can make it whatever you want to be. And the pace of it is just perfect. Like, you're never puzzle solving for too long before you get back into combat. And then when you're exploring, there's always some interesting dialogue
right,
happening.
Telling a story, like, they're talking about something, you know, like Trace is asking Kratos if they can do something. Like,
exactly. And with every other game or most other games you can think of, like, I'll use Persona as an example here, because, like, I love that game. But there's sometimes when you sit down to play that and you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure this session I've got 2 hours and I'm going to do more of, like, management kind of stuff. Like, I'm not going to get a lot going on. But you can sit down and play this game for 20 minutes or, like, 3 hours, and you're going to get a variety of different activities. You're going to be exploring different environments. There's going to be at least one quote that's going to make you laugh or consider life or something. Like, it's just...
That's Mimir.
It just oozes. It oozes, like...
It does.
Like, I don't understand how they make a game
like
this.
It is a masterclass. Like, and we're still early, so obviously, like, we'll keep following up and keep building, but just... The way it's going so far and what it's building off of, like, these are the kind of games that are special, right? Like, there's a lot of games you play for entertainment, but they don't, you know, that's all it is. But this is the kind of game where, like, it sticks with you and, like, you experience a journey and you feel like it kind of changes you in a way. Like, I just want to play some God of War.
It's amazing.
What are we doing talking about?
I don't know. I really
God
don't
War
know.
Right
like,
now.
It's a miracle that I didn't play any today yet.
Right?
To be
Me
honest.
Too. Fuck.
It really is.
Okay. I've got a couple quick fire things, just funny little
Sounds
notes
good.
I put
Sounds
in.
Sounds good.
Maybe to wrap
Same
up.
Same with me, actually. So let's do those.
Okay. Awesome. So there is, at the beginning of the game, Kratos puts his arm around Atreus. Like, when they're going to sled home, he sort of gives him a little side hug, which is just the cutest fucking thing in the world. And in the codex, he writes that, like, Atreus sometimes reminds him of Faye, and that makes him, like, brings, like so much pride to him. Like, oh, Kratos, cute dad. Faye looks so much like Karen Page from Daredevil.
That's amazing.
She does, though, right? Like,
you know what? I can't envision it now, but next time I play it.
Look her up, because there's a scene where, like, she visits Kratos in a dream, and we'd never seen Faye before, right? We know what she looks like. It's Karen Page from Daredevil is exactly what she looks like. So that's really funny. There's a plunging attack in the game now, and you just got to shout out, like, you know, the rule of gaming is if you have a plunging attack opportunity, you do a plunging attack. That's badass as fuck. What else do we got here? There's a really good line where Thor says to Kratos, like, you are a destroyer like me. And that's just more of, like, the fate, like, Kratos. I don't give a shit about my fate. Like, I'm changing it. I'm not a destroyer. And then the one other really funny thing. Oh, Brock and Sindri's house is fucking gorgeous.
It's amazing.
I want to live at their house. And then the last thing is when they're traveling back to their house from where, like, Atreus had run off to. And Atreus says to Kratos, they get to a certain point. He's like, ah, remember when we fought our first troll out here? And, like, you're kind of standing on top of a platform and, like, you're kind of looking down on an area that's, like, very clearly a fight arena. And I thought to myself, like, oh my God, is there a troll down there?
I thought the same thing. I'm like, I thought they were going to do it
too.
I
was so waiting for it.
I thought for sure what was going to happen, honestly. My bet when I saw that was going to be, we were going to go fight a troll, and then there was going to be no troll fights for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Because they seem to be so self-aware of that.
They
criticism.
Are so, like, that was such a funny joke. Like, remember our first troll? Like,
Yeah. I remember also the 7th troll, 8th troll, 9th troll.
I think in this game, this is a good question. Do you think there will be a troll fight? I think there will be one, but I think it'll be, like, a hidden kind of optional one. Like, I think it'll be, like, in a side quest or in something that's not... It's going to be, like, this long kind of, like, hidden and maybe tedious way to get to. And it's going to be, like, you're going to, like, be expecting some loot or something really cool at the end of it. And then it's going to be a troll. And it will be a troll.
Yeah. I feel like there will be. And it'll be set up as a normal fight. But then there'll be, like, like one of them will make a side comment that for those who played the first game will be like, oh, I know, like they're saying like, oh, that mm-hmm. seems like, you know, I could do that in my sleep or something. Yeah, like
or
that.
Or Trace will be like, Kratos, you remember what to do, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Oh. Something like that would be my guess.
Yeah. I think we'll see one. Just one.
Yeah. Exactly. So, okay, to end this whole thing off, I got a question for you. Okay. Do you want to be Kratos or Mimir?
Do I want to be Kratos? I mean...
We're going to read a quote together.
Oh, okay. I will be Kratos.
Okay, this is my favorite quote in the game so far, okay. As you're in the boat, okay? So I've got a quote here. I've highlighted it. I'm going to read to the first end of this quote, and okay. then you will be Kratos, read to the end of that quote, and we're going to do it, okay?
Okay.
And we're going to do our best impressions of each Kratos. Okay. Brother, you ever think of grilling meat with those blades?
No, they would foul the meat.
Ah, because of the magic?
No. The blood. Yes.
That's the greatest quote in the game so far.
They make the most ultimate buddy cop because Mimir is always so like, you know, like lighthearted, like kind of making jokes, and Kratos was just, no. No.
Oh man. All right. So I think we're done with God of War for now. For this episode. Make sure to write in with emails to let us know which of our impressions was better for Kratos and Mimir.
And who should be Brock and who should be Sindri.
That's right. Yeah. But anyway, we do have a couple other topics because we always both bring a different topic to talk about on the show to add some variety. So Kate, I would love to hear, to completely shift topics, about your experience with Rogue Legacy 2.
Yeah, so this is totally random in comparison to God of War, but you know what? I just happened to see something. You know what it was? I watched the indie presentation.
Nintendo Indie World
that came out on the 9th.
Which we definitely would have talked about if we didn't need to spend 50 minutes talking about God of War.
Yeah, the 9th was a bad day to do a presentation. Like, it's not like Sonic levels of bad of releasing your game the day before. But it's not a great time for a presentation. But I guess maybe they're thinking not tons of overlap with Nintendo and God of War. But anyways, Rogue Legacy 2 is released on the Switch, like came out.
So did you buy
like,
it on the Switch?
No, I have it on Steam. Mm. But I had played it back in like when it was still in beta or like early access or some kind of like unfinished state. I was like, oh, you know what? I'll check it out. Like, it's kind of a good game to sort of like just like unwind with. And, you know, I kind of like listen to a podcast or something while I play.
Yeah.
And it's actually super cool. Like, when the premise of this, the Rogue Legacy, is it's a roguelike. You, like, explore castles and you, like, fight monsters and you, like, get gold to upgrade your, like, town and, you know, like, make your character stronger and so you wear, like, better armor and various stuff like that. But the kind of quirky thing about it is each time you play as a descendant of your last character, but everybody has various traits. So like you can be like one character and it's random how it gets sorted. So like, you might be colorblind and the game's like in black and white instead, or like, you know, one time sometimes you play as a dwarf, so like you're really like tiny, and then you could be like a giant, or you could be like one of the ones is like brittle bones or something, so you get hit, you like fly away further and like hit stun. And so sometimes they're helpful traits that end up like helping you, and sometimes they. And so, like, you might be, like a really hungry person, so, like, food heals you more. And sometimes there are bad things that end up, like, being negatives, but it's just sort of random what you get. So it kind of just adds some, like, variety, and some of them are kind of quirky and funny, but it's mostly just a cute concept. But what's cool about it now is this game originally, I think when I was playing, it had 4 classes. And now it has 15, so that's a massive jump. And some of them are, like, wild. Like, the base one is a warrior. He just has a sword. They all have different, like, weapons that you use. And then, like, a class-specific skill. And then a spell. And the spell is just, like, a random spell of any that you could have. But, so the warrior, he's, like, he just has a sword that kind of does, like, a, you know, generic sort of swing. And a shield that can block. That's his thing. And then you get, like, a mage, and he just, instead of having a special thing, he has 2 spells. And he, like, regains mana on hit. And so, like, that's his thing. And then, like, they made some fucking wild classes. One's, like, a pirate, and he has, like, a massive cannon you can either, like, melee hit with or shoot a cannonball. But his class-specific skill is you get in a pirate ship and fly around. And it, like, just shoots, like, cannonballs, like, crazy outside of it. So I don't know what the fuck they did with the balancing of this game, because they seem, like, drastically different.
Did you ever play the first one?
I did play a bit of the first one. Not tons, but it's the same kind of, like,
because I played the first one, too, but that sounds, like, really ridiculous.
It's the same kind of concept as, like, 2D rooms that you can clear out and you kill enemies, they give you money, and there's like a boss at the end of each area, and then you can move on to the next area. But it just got like so insanely wild in this game so quickly. But it kind of fits, and it's just like a fun little like roguelike kind of dungeon crawler, like 2D, like side scroller action kind of thing. But it's relatively difficult. Like, you kind of have to.
I found
to
the
really,
first one difficult.
Yeah, like you have to be into it. And it's kind of built that way where you do a run and then you get a, you know, like a little bit more health and you do a run and you upgrade and you have a little more armor. And you,
yeah, you're like not meant to succeed at the start because they want you to have that loop of upgrading yourself enough to where you're able to withstand like enough damage or whatever.
Exactly.
Right?
But I think it's pretty satisfying, and the runs all feel relatively different because, especially with so many different classes now, is you really kind of get to take on a different play style for each one. Mm-hmm. My new favorite one now is they introduced like a samurai class. Obviously it'd be my favorite. But he's got like a cool katana and he slashes like forward, like the sheath, like quick slash, and he can do it in like angles. So like you can't do straight up, but you can do sort of like angled up or angled down. So like he has to position in an interesting way to have like coverage of like vertical. But his class spell is you like dash forward, you kind of like teleport a set distance forwards, and then you slash anything you went through.
Oh, cool. And then like slices afterwards.
And it, like slashes after, yeah.
Classic, really classic samurai business.
Classic samurai business. So that's really cool. The pirate, I don't know about that. There's also the cook I really like. He's got a frying pan, and it's not a very, like, it's not the strongest
weapon.
Does
he game and watch bacon people?
Chuck's bacon. He just sort of whacks you with his frying pan and makes like a bonk noise when it hits. But what's cool about it is he can, like, deflect projectiles. So if, like, an enemy is, like, shooting something at you, you can, like, whack it back with the frying pan. Mm-hmm. And then his class skill is he stops and he makes soup and it heals you. But you, like, stand there and you make soup. So, like, I beat the first boss with the chef. But there was one point where I was, like, dying, and so the boss was, like, charging up an attack, and so, like, I kind of got to a safe spot, and I was, like, furiously, like, making soup in the middle of the fight. So.
I think that's one of the things I loved most about Rogue Legacy is there's that level of humor to it.
Yeah.
That, like, it's just really well done, I think. Like, it's not stupid enough to be annoying, but it's just subtle enough to, like, some of the descriptions of the classes are really funny.
Yeah. Exactly. And every time you get like a new armor, there's a little like flavor text that goes along with it. But it's a good blend of like it's casual and kind of silly and funny, but at the same time, like, it's genuinely like gets pretty challenging when you get up to the newer areas. And so there's a lot I haven't explored, especially since having played a bit of the beta. But like,
well, and especially since all you're gonna play is God of War.
But it's my, like, you know, like I gotta relax, because God of War is not a relaxing game. Like,
yeah, no.
God of War is the kind of game where, like, I think I played it, I think we were up to like 2 a.m last night playing it, and that was awesome, but it wasn't like a good transition going to bed after playing some intense God of War.
That's what Marvel Snap's for, Kate, I'll tell you right now.
That's fair.
What Marvel Snap is for. Well, speaking of things that don't make it easy to go to bed, let me tell you about my topic for the week, which is Paranormal Activity, a movie which I never thought I would talk about on this podcast, but here we are, because I rewatched it the other night. And this was a really interesting rewatch, because this is, it's from 2007, so it's actually a little bit, I mean, it's not new. Like, obviously, that's a long time ago now, but it's newer than I thought it was. And you've seen Paranormal Activity. You don't like it,
unfortunately,
right?
Yeah. It's really funny you decided to talk about this, because, to be fair, it's been a long time since I've seen it. But Paranormal Activity is, like, up there on the list of worst movies I've ever seen. So this should be fun.
See, that's what's funny. Okay, so it was an interesting thing to revisit. And the reason that I say that is because, like, speaking of it from current day, like, today, the found footage sort of genre is so overplayed. Like, there's those ones where there's like kids on their phones on like Zoom now, and if you log off the Zoom call first, like, you die. Like, it's just, it's so overplayed,
so,
right? Like, found footage is so overdone. But at the time when this came out, like, I think like Blair Witch was kind of the pioneer.
Right. Okay, but, I was going to ask if it predated Blair Witch.
Yeah, Blair Witch is the pioneer, but, and I'm sure there were some other ones too. Like, by no means am I like a film expert, but I think Paranormal Activity was sort of the first mainstream, really big, aside from Blair Witch, like, the breakthrough kind of like commercial success found footage kind of thing. And it's interesting to go back and, like, I tried to watch as if, like, oh, I've never seen this before, right? And the concept is really cool, because the movie itself only has like four or five characters, you know, it's filmed like on a handy cam. Like one of the characters basically is the cameraman. Like it's about this couple and they move into a house and there's like weird shit that happens. But essentially it's like she's being haunted. They're trying to figure out what's going on. He's filming like everything. Like he's so incessant with it too. Like she's brushing her teeth. She's like on the toilet. Yeah. He's coming in. He's like got the camera. And it's like, come on, man. Like just turn it off for five seconds. But it was cool to see that. And I don't think it's held up as well as Blair Witch, to be honest. And I think that's like my personal preference. Like I find Blair Witch like so scary. I don't know what it is. That movie is scary. That movie just really gets me. And I think what it is with these movies is that you really have to watch it with the intention of paying attention and not like sitting and chatting with your friends and belittling it. Right. Because the second like it is funny when like the cupboard's open for no reason. If you're sitting there making jokes with your friends, like it's not going to be scary. But if you sit there and you like pay attention, take it for what it is, like it is unsettling in a way. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's just like what I find scary. But what I think is the most impressive thing about going back to watch it, and especially considering it is from, you know, 2007, and I'm sure it didn't have the hugest budget on release just because of like the way it's filmed. Like intentionally, I think one of the benefits of these movies is that they're cheap to make.
Especially and, with like hardly any characters, hardly any locations.
They're cheap to make, and the characters are also like no name actors. Like they're obviously professionals, but they don't have like Will Arnett playing the main character. You know, it's like the two main characters are like the one guy's name is Micah, and I forget the girl's name, but the actors are actually like those are their real names. Like they didn't even give them character names.
Oh, but, that's funny.
Like the special effects are actually really good. Like, you know, there's some scenes where like, you know, the demon comes into their bed and like lifts up their bed sheets, like pulls them back. And, you know, it doesn't look shitty. Like it reminds me of the kind of thing where, you know, when you go back and watch like the original Jurassic Park and there's something about the original, like the dinosaurs look better than the newer ones because it's like not CGI. It's actually like practical effects.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it, but like this movie reminds me of that type of thing where like the special effects hold up really well compared to.
I wonder if the way that it's shot on like a that like kind of like lesser quality camera helps lend to that.
I don't know,
because it's not as like you're not looking as like a perfect clear image.
It really could be, but I'm really not sure. But there's like the scene where the bed sheets lift up. There's one scene where like, you know, the girl, she like literally like hovers in the bed and like I was looking for like, you know, you can like in the Marvel movies you can see all this shit, the green screen, you can tell like, oh, that's a green screen, right? But this movie, like, it doesn't have that. Like it legit looks like she's hovering, and it's like, to me, that really was impressive. It's definitely really slow. Like it takes a long time to happen. They really have to build it up, so I wouldn't say that's great. But what's really cool about watching it, and I watched it on Blu-ray at home, is I'd never seen the alternate ending, which is kind of interesting. So the way the movie ends in the first one is that she like chucks him into the camera, right?
Right.
Like she gets possessed and she ends up killing him and like chucks him into the camera. But in the alternate ending, she like walks up to the camera and she like slits her throat like as she's possessed. And it's like, whoa. It's like really unsettling to watch it, and like you're not expecting it. But I don't know, like, I wouldn't say it's great, like, and you have to go the right peace of mind, but something about this movie, I like it a lot still, but I wouldn't say it's good. Like, it's the way I describe, like, Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, right? Like,
Sonic Adventure way better.
Like a 2.5 out of 10 game, or like a 4 out of 10 game that I love, like a 10 out of 10. Like, this movie is like, you know, a 3 out of 5 star movie that I like a 5 star movie. Like, it's just got that fair. Sentimental piece to it.
I think I can, like, respect it for being, like, the idea of it. Mm-hmm. The concept of it is cool. And I think, like, I can appreciate that, you know, they built it up. It wasn't just jump scares all the time. They built it up and, like, it played out the way I think it was intended to play out. I think my biggest problem with this is I don't find either the characters interesting or pleasant to listen to. Like, it just feels like they bickered a lot and were kind of annoying. And so watching, like, it's a cool concept, especially with like multiple endings, but it to me, it's like watching the movie is watching an annoying couple bicker for an hour, and then you get a jump scare and then it's time to go home. Like, it kind of like the payoff of one jump scare was not worth that, like, annoying couple who just really needs to, like,
that's probably true,
sit down and actually have a conversation with each other.
That's probably true. So the one thing I will say, and this is not something I remembered going in, is that I would say one of the redeeming factor about it as well is that this is a movie where, you know, usually it's like, oh, one of them's like, oh, there's something really wrong, we need to leave. And the other one's like, fuck, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. Everything's fine, don't worry about it. I'm just going to go to the attic and like, hang out.
We always just hang out, like, in the attic with our Ouija board. Exactly. What's weird?
Exactly. Like, this movie, like, to their credit, the characters both do kind of take, like, he doesn't take it quite as seriously as she does, but, like, it's not like he's completely dismissive. Mm-hmm. And they actually kind of do agree that something is happening. And so, like, there's some variation in that. But to me, it's like, at least that's believable, you know? Like, at least that's something.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Props then.
So I'd give that some props. But yeah, it's a weird couple. Like, I don't know if I love them. But, I mean, it was what it was. And I think that, you know, especially with the alternate ending, I'm glad I watched it again. Would I recommend it to everyone? No. I know I would not. Especially because, like I said, it's just so played out. Like, I like the first one. By no means do I want to watch 2, 3,
there's
and 4.
There's, like, so,
and,
like, many of them, right?
Yeah, there's so many. But it's cool because I also feel like Insidious is one of my favorite horror movies as well. Like, have you seen Insidious?
I think so. That's the one where
he gets possessed. Like, they go into their dreams. Like, they leave their bodies.
There's that, like, red demon guy.
Yeah.
I loved Insidious. Yeah. That was a good movie. I watched it recently.
Exactly.
Actually.
But what I like about it is I feel like those movies have such a root in Paranormal Activity. The fact that it's, like, things happening at night, and there's, like, well, I mean, that's a lot of horror movies, I guess, but the things when it's, like, things move for no reason, or, like, there's something's out of place, or there's, like, something on the ground, or, you know, a picture frame is shattered when they get up.
Yeah.
Like, all of those things I feel really can be traced back to Paranormal Activity as like a birthing place for this type of horror.
Interesting. All right, I'll give it props for that, but, like, it sucks. Just watch Insidious. Insidious has, I think, the best jump scare that's ever gotten me in a movie.
I agree. Insidious is scary as shit.
It's scary as shit. There's one, and it's just, like, it's the one where, I can't really remember the scene, but it's just, like, the guy, they're just having a conversation, like, it really just doesn't seem like the kind of moment where there's going to be a jump scare. And then I think, like, it's not even set to music or anything, it's just, like, the demon's face is behind him.
Yeah.
That scared the shit out of me, that scene.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some scenes in this one where she's clearly possessed, and, like, the actress, I think the actress in this movie is actually, like, the show stealer, honestly, because she's so subtly different when she's been possessed by this demon, and her eyes are just a bit different. The way she talks to him is just a little lifeless. Like, in the scene, one day she's like, oh, we need to leave this house. Like, this is, something's wrong. We have to go. And then you see, like, the demon, like, you know, somehow takes her over at night. And then she's laying in bed the next morning, and she's like, no, we have to stay. We have to stay here. It makes me comfortable. And, like, you know, something's fucked up, and it's just really unsettling. I like that kind of thing. I don't know. Anyways, everybody. That's Paranormal Activity. Watch it if you like it. If not, play Rogue Legacy, play God of War. Those are probably gonna be better experiences for you.
I won this episode. My stuff was cooler.
that's true. Anyways, that's gonna be the show for today. We gotta go play some God of War before going to bed here. So, hey, tell you what, email in, like we said, with your God of War thoughts for the next show at cloudcontrol@proton.me. Thank you for everyone that supports the show and enjoys our content. We sincerely appreciate it. And we love getting all the engagement. It's perfect. What else can we say? Let's go play some God of War, and we'll be back next time with another episode. We'll probably talk about more God of War because it's all we're going to do. So until then, this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.